Hey, it's Sandra and Chris.
Thanks so much for listening to Heart of the Enneagram. We hope this podcast is offering you insights as well as entry points for opening the heart.
We offer this podcast as a free resource for personal and spiritual growth. And in order to continue this work, we need your support.
So please visit our website, heartoftheenneagram.com, and click on the link to contribute.
Whatever you give will be gratefully received.
Welcome to Heart of the Enneagram. I'm Chris Copeland.
And I'm Sandra Smith.
And we invite you to take a courageous and loving look at what is.
I never didn't trust Fran. I didn't trust me. That was the biggest not trusting, and remains my challenge, although I certainly have been conscious of making changes, specific changes, that have allowed me to trust me. Good morning, Chris.
Morning, Sandra. It's good to be back at Wake Forest University. And today we get to learn about the relationship dynamics between a two and a six.
Yes. And representing type six is Nancy Dunn. And Nancy is retired after 40 years of owning and managing a small business. She says she found the Enneagram in midlife and recognized it as a great tool for accurate self-reflection. And accurate self-observation. Those sixes are so great at observation. It took her 12 years of intensely studying the system with many teachers to realize that rather than leading with eight, she in fact leads with type six. The six and eight can be lookalikes. Nancy has a passion for sharing the Enneagram with others and facilitates a monthly discussion group at her church in Winston-Salem. Welcome. Glad you're with us, Nancy.
Thank you.
And you know, Nancy and I go back years. She and I certified. We were in the same certification process with the narrative tradition. So it's good to see you again.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Yeah, thank you.
Fran Newsom, who leads with Type 2, is a retired elementary school teacher of 32 years. And she's always been interested, she says, in knowing herself more honestly and spiritually. And the Enneagram has been a great tool for her in terms of self-discovery and her spiritual growth. And Fran and Nancy have been friends for over 42 years.
Mm.
So they know the friendship dynamic, and today we'll hear about the dynamic between the two and the six in their friendship.
So to take in the material more fully, we invite ourselves and our listeners to ground, to have access to all three brains, and that requires a grounded presence. So just take a deep breath and feel our feet on the floor. Allow our hearts to open and to approach this material with a curious mind, to be curious about ourselves and each other. So let's take a deep breath.
The lead center for intelligence for type six is the head center. And sixes are, as head types, are information oriented. The motivation for the six is to anticipate possible harm, to where is the possible harm. And so their focus of attention tends to be on worst case scenario. What could go wrong and how might I be prepared for it? The core fear for the six is being unable to cope with situations, being helpless. And so they can become reactive if they feel controlled or boxed in because this can feel unsafe. Some of the strengths for type six are a questioning mind, a healthy skepticism. They're really advocates for the underdog, concerned for the underdog, and they have amazing analytical skills and great warmth, and they are loyal to others, and then they're loyal to relationships.
Type two is in the heart triad, the feeling center. They are relational-oriented, so they know first through mood, tone, and feeling. The focus of this type is on others' needs. They are other-referencing. And so the blind spot is their own needs. The motivation for this type is to have you like me, so there can be a seeking of approval. The reactivity trigger and core fear for this type is really to be useless, unable to be helpful. And there is a connection between I am loved for helping. And so if I am rejected or feel useless, then my worth is at stake for this type. Lots of strengths for type two. I call these the people readers of the Enneagram. They're sensitive. They notice things about others. They are kind, approachable, and really have a positive, enthusiastic spirit. Now, interestingly, these two, six and two, are lookalikes on the Enneagram, behaviorally. So both can be friendly, approachable, and somewhat people-pleasing. But the motivation is different. For type two, it's for approval. For type six, it's to be safe, because there's a fear of being alone in a dangerous world. And if I'm in a group, or if you like me, I'll feel safer. Both of these types, curiously enough, two being other referencing and six actually being other oriented. So we have two types that are other referencing, two and nine, and two more types that are other oriented, which are six and eight. And some of that comes from the mistrust that those two types share.
So we want to welcome again Nancy and Fran. Thanks for being here today. And we want to dive into this dynamic of the two and the six. So we want to start with a question. What works well for the two of you? So Nancy, as you lead with six, and Fran, as you lead with two, what has worked well in your friendship and in your relationship over the years coming from those types?
Well, as Sandra said, it is interesting how alike twos and sixes are. I mean, there are no lines between them. You know, they're not wings. They're not, you wouldn't think that there would be a close connection. And yet I think that there is a lot of similarity in the way that we operate in the world. But there are nuances that are very different. You know, the warm and friendly, you know, from Fran to others seems to me to have to be warmer and friendlier than my warm and friendly. Mine is a little more analytical, and you know, I'm in my head doing that. Mm-hmm. She's in her heart doing that. So there's mm-hmm. a difference.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it works really well between the two of us.
Talk about how it works well.
Well, I think in some ways, I mean, I think all nine types are looking for security, just as all nine types mm-hmm. are looking for love. And so the ways in which we operate between each other, I think, gives us both a lot of security and makes us feel loved.
Mm-hmm.
And so we sort of get those needs in ways that other types might not.
So the six staying loyal and the mm-hmm. two staying connected, mm-hmm. you might say.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. I know that at any time, I mean, literally, at 3 o'clock in the morning, I could call Nancy and she would be there without hesitation. I know she would. For me, as a two, she grounds me, because when I'm all emotional and, you know, doubting myself, she's very analytical. So, you know, she goes to XYZ, mm-hmm. you know, makes me calm down, sort of references me to what's going on. And that's a great strength that she gives me.
Yeah, so you have some of that analytical gifts of the six mm-hmm. that
right.
help kind of put some perspective on the mm-hmm. emotional
right.
Or big feelings of the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you were going over the attributes of the six, I was thinking, well, that's like me, because I'm very anxious, you know, and doomsday-ish, and could I cope with the worst-case scenario? But at the same time, I realize we're coming from two very different places mm-hmm. with that.
So those are good gifts that each of your types contributes to this relationship. I'm wondering if there are things about your type aspects that trip you up in this relationship.
One of the things that I have noticed is how obsessive Nancy can be when something is bothering her. She has to go over it and over it and over it but it's helped me so much learning about sixes to realize where that's coming from. Mm. You know, I realize she's got to do that to sort through and come to her best answer. So I'm much more tolerant of it than I would have been if I didn't know that, mm-hmm. you know.
What's the impact of that on you? How does that affect you?
I don't, you know, since I understand it, I think it makes me compassionate. I don't think, I mean, occasionally it will irritate me, but rarely does it irritate me. I feel more compassion. And really, it's my knowledge of the Enneagram that has made me react to her in that way.
You know, those sixes can, with all of their questions and going over it, when we don't know the system and we have a six in front of us doing that, it's like, whoa, you know, there's a lot of overthinking, a lot of mental energy going into that. And what do I do with it? And of course, we just simply offer abiding presence and reassurance for our sixes that we love. Mm-hmm. Sounds like you're doing that.
I hope so.
Yeah.
What about you, for you, Fran, what gets about your type trips you up or has tripped you up in this friendship, this relationship?
Probably trying to rescue her and offer advice when she doesn't need advice. That's probably the biggest thing. Of course, Nancy's probably got my number, literally, you know, on that. But I'm quick to problem solve, and maybe that's part of my teacher background. But she doesn't need me to problem solve for her. She just needs me to support her and love her. So, but we know each other so well, and we know our children and our, you know, we know all the dynamics of our children and their relationships. So I think it's easy for me to fall into an advice-giving role if I'm not careful, mm-hmm. you know.
And that's some of the pattern of the two, is this advice-giving. And mm-hmm. sometimes twos can move in, intrude even.
And be very intrusive, yes.
Right.
I really fight against that. Because right. I know in my past I have been intrusive, mm-hmm. you know, into other people's lives. So I work real hard on that
yeah.
to not be that way.
Yeah.
In the heart triad, it's the energy of engaging or over-engaging. And so the trick is, how do I know when I cross that line into over-engaging if I'm a heart type?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What about you, Nancy? What are some things that you notice have tripped you up or do trip you up as a type six in this relationship?
Well, it's something that I never thought about before, but as you all are talking, as Fran's talking too, I'm realizing that one of the things I seek from her, you know, always looking outside myself mm-hmm. for the answers, is that she's willing to give me the answers. And they're because she knows me so well and knows all of my family and my concerns and my angst. She is able to often be spot on in terms of what the answers might be. So it that may mean, I'm sure it does mean, that I then don't feel my way. No, I was trying to avoid saying think my way toward my own answer, because it's so easy for me to turn to her and say, you know, Fran, what do you think I should say? What do you think I should do?
Mm-hmm. That you've illustrated beautifully that dynamic, because your tendency, as you name, is to look outward.
Right.
And Fran's real easy. She's quick to, I can give you something. I can give
right.
you. Yeah. So there's a dynamic that gets created in that. I appreciate your awareness of how that might keep you from coming to your own assurance, your own knowing.
Right. Right. When probably all I really need, as she said so well, is to know that she supports and loves me.
Mm.
And that's the thing, that's the missing piece for me, because if I can relax into that, then I do find answers, or
yeah.
I do come to a different place.
Beautiful. How can Fran best support and love you? What does that look like?
She's very good about letting me know that she's there at any hour of the day or night to do whatever is needed. And I think we both know, we know that about each other, and we don't abuse that, but just knowing that it's there makes a world of difference. Mm. It makes my life feel different than it would otherwise.
Mm. It's almost like she has your back.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
exactly.
You have each other's backs.
Oh, that absolutely. What the way I have often put it to her is, I say, "You're my rock."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think we both revel in the non-judgment mm-hmm. of whatever, wherever each one of us is. There've been times when Nancy certainly had to bite her tongue. And some of the decisions I've made in my life or some of the ways I've reacted. But I think we both allow ourselves to or try very hard to not be judgmental of how we're coming to our answers, you know, or coming to our place of knowing.
Hmm. You know, it's interesting because both these types are kind of fix-it types, even sixes, when it's not yours. Like, if I have a problem and I come to you, then, you know, you're going to be on it.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, I have to tell my friends who are sixes, now, just listen to me. Don't try and fix it. I just need to talk this out. And the same is true for type two. So you're there, and it can be a setup for these two types. You're kind of bait for each other. And how wonderful that you're naming it, Nancy, that you can articulate how that is so that you can do your work. Yeah, thank you.
One of the things that I was just thinking about is I rarely, I'm having trouble even remembering a time when I felt judgmental in the way that Fran described about decisions that she's made. And I think that my openness or my lack of judgment is in part healthy. And in other ways, it's because I don't want to be judged.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And so it makes me feel more secure not to be judging. I'm not articulating that very well.
Well said. Well said.
Yeah. And, you know, your two friend over here is rejection sensitive. So depending on your facial expression when she's talking, she can start projecting on you. And it's about... Is she approving what I'm saying, or am I still in good standing with Nancy? And so there's a little kind of game, if you will, going on when you're speaking what you need to speak, Fran, and Nancy may keep an emotionless face or something, and you might project onto that.
Right.
Yeah.
I think the years that we've been together makes a huge difference,
yes.
too, because early in our relationship, Nancy was this successful businesswoman. I mean, super successful businesswoman. I felt like she just had it so together. And of course, then I was much more pleasing toward her, nor would I have been nearly as honest with her. Mm. But as we've grown and trust each other, we've both been able to be more our authentic selves, I believe, you know, and that just takes time and trust and, you know, trusting that loyalty that she's not going to abandon me no matter what I tell her or what I choose, you know. When I was going through my divorce, she was so wonderful at just listening to me. And I think she felt like whatever I chose, I was going to learn something. Mm-hmm. You know, however I reacted, I was going to learn a lesson in it. But that took the maturity of our relationship for that to evolve that way. I think early in any relationship, you're trying
sure.
to gain people's favor.
Sure.
Or twos certainly
well,
are.
Twos are trying. Not all of us try to gain the other's favor.
Yeah. That's much healthier.
But and Fran, what I'm hearing you say is that now in this relationship, after these many years, you can say, "Help me."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now that is huge.
Or tell me the way you see it.
That's not so difficult, but help me.
But it is. I think it's difficult if you think what you're going to say is going to hurt or give a lot of angst to the other person.
Right.
You know, if you love them, you don't want to say something you know that is, yes. is
so you're
is
still
hurtful.
Other oriented, that you're other referencing. Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying is when you say help me, now you're focused on you.
Yes.
I have a
yes.
need, please help me. And
yes.
those are that's scarcity. There's rarely a time when a two says help me. The fact that there's this trust with you and Nancy and you can do that, it's just, I can't say enough how big that is and how healthy that is.
Fran and I both are lucky enough to have lots of wonderful, loving, supportive people mm-hmm. in our lives, although certainly our relationship is different from all the rest of those. There are times when I actually wish that Fran would call on me more for help because that would feel really good for me. But she also has other people in her life, and given whatever it is that she's going through, sure. you know, she's turning, as we all do, to the person that best meets that particular need. But I do love it when she says, help me. It feels wonderful for me.
There's a little bit of background to that, though, from where I come from. Because when I was going through my divorce, I'm not sure why Nancy didn't shoot me. Because I was calling her 5 and 6 times a day, literally to the end of my rope. And I felt like I so abused our friendship during that time. I mean, she was gracious and wonderful and all that, but goodness gracious. You know, I've tried to be a little more, first of all, self-reflective, you know, and trying to sort things out, you know, for myself. But there was a time in our relationship when I felt like, you know, I abused her good analytical mind. So that may play into it a little bit. I had not thought of that until just then.
As you were talking about it, you seem touched as you tell that story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't remember a single...
I can't believe she doesn't remember.
No, but. I don't remember. I remember the phone calls and, you know, lots of conversation, but I don't remember ever once feeling resentful or... I mean, maybe it's because you've done so much for me in so many ways for such a long time. And there was a part of me that felt like this is payback time. Mm-hmm. You know, this is my time to give rather than to take.
Fran, what's it like for you to receive?
It's very hard.
Yeah, in this situation, mm-hmm. Nancy gave you her mm-hmm. ear, her compassion. Right. She picked up the phone when you called. What was that like to be able to receive that?
Yeah, I love it, of course, and it's so loving. But my gut reaction to most situations like that is, you know, I want to be in control. Mm-hmm. I want to be in charge. I want to be the one giving, mm-hmm. you know, not, I'm much more comfortable at giving than receiving. And it's a growing edge for me. I'm working on that.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to be more, case in point, I had a couple of sessions of vertigo and Nancy wanted to bring food or do this or do that. And I realized I should say, well, sure. You know, even if I didn't have an immediate need for it, she so wanted to do that for me. Mm-hmm. I should have been more gracious in allowing her to do that. So I realized I can gift people that way too, you know.
It's true.
It is true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Two things come to mind as you're talking, Fran. One is, David Daniels, our friend and mentor, who co-founded the Narrative Tradition, says when giving and receiving are from the heart, they are the same act. So,
that's a wonderful image.
And so all transactions fade mm-hmm. because it's done from the heart and compassion and love. The other thought that arose was Chris and I both, when we were in theology school at Candler, at different times, went with Professor Thomas Thangaraj to India. And one of the first things he told our group was, when you Americans come to my country, you're going to have to receive. We do not see it as a transaction in India. And oh my goodness, if we said, boy, this is a great pudding or whatever it was. Well, we got the whole pot.
Right.
And we received it. And it was such good practice. So, Fran, it is much easier to give than receive more often. But, boy, is it it can be life-changing to allow one's heart to be touched.
Right.
Yeah.
So what are some strategies or practices that you each notice that you engage in to help, you know, those ways you might trip up? Or how do you, what are some things that you pay attention to kind of help that grow, the relationship grow, or to help you not get tripped up?
I think, you know, more and more just being aware of the good ways to help Nancy, not the dependent ways or not the manipulative ways. You know, just what I'm working on in all other relationships, really, just trying to come from a much more honest, open-hearted place. I don't really know.
Say more about the good ways to help. What does that look
well,
like?
Well, you know, for two, we often give with strings attached, and I don't want to do that. Or we're ingratiating, or we're very manipulative. You know, I hate that. You know, when we get the negative Enneagrams, the thoughts for the day, I just think, you know, I don't want to think of myself that way. So I try to really I try to be more open and honest in my giving to Nancy and in my attention to her. I mean, part of it's just friendship. I'm going to check in, da 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 da. But I think right now, the biggest gift, she and I both have a lot of anxiety about growing older and losing our faculties. And we laugh about it a lot. And I think that helps so much take away our fear. And we're there for each other, you know. And we understand, too. We at this time in our life, we understand that friends are dying. Our health is waning. Well, not too much, we hope, but somewhat. So I think that give and take there really helps us.
You know, yeah. I've heard someone call that, Fran, clean giving.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's the way I want to do. I want to be a clean giver.
It's that giving without strings, mm-hmm. without attachment, without needing something back, but just clean giving.
Right.
Hmm. How about you, Nancy?
Well, I think that it's not possible to overestimate the loving support that a sense of humor brings. And for us to be able to make fun of our own anxieties and concerns and laugh about them makes all the difference. It lightens them up, and we sixes, we need to be lightened up. We're kind of heavy. I mean, sometimes I wonder, why on earth does anybody want to spend time with me? God, I'm such a downer. People who I respect and love assure me that that's not the right. truth, but that's certainly the way it feels inside me.
It's my six friends who really help me laugh often.
Yeah, I hear in that too, that self-doubt. It's like, why would people want to be around me?
Right.
That sort of pattern of the six.
Absolutely.
So how do you bring that laughter and playfulness? What helps you do that, Nancy?
Being with people that I know who love me and who are willing to be silly. You know, because I'm not a silly person. I'm a serious person. and it's just such a gift. And Fran has that light touch and is able to bring that to me often. But we cry together too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's important. That's a great way of supporting each other. I can't tell you the number of times we'll be on the phone and one or both of us will say, you know, I feel like I really need to cry, but I can't cry by myself. But sometimes when we're talking to each other, even if it's phone, not in person, you know, we can feel those strong feelings and you know, let out some of that grief and anxiety.
Our children should be paying each of us, because we saved them an earful.
It's a beautiful friendship.
I treasure it.
Yes, and she is my rock.
Mm. What are some ways that you can help your relationship flourish even more as you think about your type? What might be your invitation to grow?
Well, when Fran and I were talking about your request for us to do this, and of course we were both feeling kind of anxious about it, and I would always prefer not to do things like this. But I said to her that I often find it helpful when I'm forced to be reflective with other people, and the things that I hear coming out of my mouth give me new insight. And, you know, I think that's the thing that we're both committed to, is providing as much insight to the other as possible. And I think that's how we will, because I think we're committed to that, I think that's how we will continue to grow the love and the friendship.
Mm-hmm. Because sixes don't trust easily, and Fran's already acknowledged this kind of hidden agenda sometimes, at what point and how did you come to trust this beloved friend, given those pieces of the types? Do you remember a point when you said, ah, I can trust her? What allows that to happen in you?
Well, I think that, I understand and agree with the fact that sixes often have difficulty trusting, but I find that my particular brand of that, and you have to remember too that in my 20s, 30s, and 40s, I was the poster child for counterphobic.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it's been helpful to me to actually come to a much greater knowledge of the phobic part of my sixness. But I never didn't trust Fran. I didn't trust me.
There you go. Yep. Good.
That was the biggest not trusting, and remains my challenge, although I certainly have been conscious of making changes, specific changes that have allowed me to trust me. You know, I can now say with confidence, I would never do this, or I would always do this, and know that it's true. And there were times in my life when that was not the case. Mm-hmm. I didn't trust the decisions that I made, and I made some really poor ones.
And you really, you make the point, it's not that we can't trust others, we have to trust ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the growing point,
yeah,
for type six.
Right.
Thanks for that articulation.
Right.
Yeah. And what I've noticed in the aging process, because I know several counterphobic sixes in my life, and now they're all over 60 years old, and that the counterphobic is suddenly softening. And maybe it's the aging process, because there's more to fear,
mm-hmm,
as we become more limited. But I am seeing that happen. It's curious that you said that, Nancy.
Right. And in fact, it almost bothers me that I've lost so much of my counterphobic self, because I feel like I'm not as adventurous and not as likely to say, let's jump on a plane and go somewhere tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. That may be wisdom as well.
At core, as you trust yourself more, then you will have the freedom to say, let's go get on a plane now. It won't come out of a counterphobic place,
right,
but out of a trusting place.
Right.
Oh, I know this is what I want. This is what let's go do it.
Right. Yeah. Good
point.
That's
beautiful, Chris.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What about you, Fran? What might be your invitation to grow in this relationship, ways that you can help the relationship flourish, particularly as a two?
Well, I think, like Nancy said, I have a lot of close friends and all that, but nobody holds the place that Nancy does for me. And I think she and I both have acknowledged that when we get busy with life, well, we know that if something's going wrong, we will contact each other. So if something's not going wrong, I have a real tendency to let it be slack and not check in with her as often as I would like to, and I want to be more intentional about you know, about checking in, not just when I'm panicked or troubled, but we go on trips or we do this and we go for a week and a half and haven't spoken, and we really miss that. So I want to be more intentional in checking in with her. And
we need more breakfast at the K&W.
We do.
Where we watch do. The groups of people around us having so much fun together, and it really lightens our spirits.
Just dying laughing. And yeah. And I think when we were younger, we vacationed a lot together and that sort of thing, and we don't do it now that our children are grown. So we miss opportunities, and we've got to be more, and I would like to be more intentional.
Ditto.
People have mistaken us for sisters a lot, but see, I love her, I think, much more than I would a sister, because you don't have all that baggage,
right.
You know, with parents and all that. And we can be, I mean, it would be wonderful for sisters to have this kind of relationship, but I don't think many of them do, unfortunately. But Nancy's my family, though, at the same time. I think of her and her girls as our family, yeah.
Is there anything else that you all would like to add, to say, to that hasn't been said about the six and the two, or your relationship, or anything that comes up?
I came into studying the Enneagram, I think, as an aid to understand myself better.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea of the spiritual growth dimension, and to me, it is one of the most powerful tools for people to grow in the likeness of God. And I wish more people knew that. And I know people don't necessarily have to connect with that component of it, but it so clearly shows when you are not acting in loving ways and when you are acting in loving ways. And that has just been such a tremendous leap for me.
Hmm.
And I mean, I've been a church, as one of my counselors used to say, okay, church woman. I've been a church woman my whole life. But nothing, you know, no spiritual growth weekend, no program, you know, that I've gone through. Nothing like that has affected me as deeply and is such an aha, you know, as the Enneagram helping us to grow into our essence.
Mm-hmm.
It's just been a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
It gets to the core of us. It isn't about behavior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I've certainly so been touched by what you've said about not only the Enneagram, but each other.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Anything, Nancy?
No, it's just wonderful to sit here and be reflective on one of the most important parts of my life.
Yeah.
And to sort of bask in the glow of love that comes with that.
Yeah. You know, I'm remembering, Chris, one of the reasons we wanted to do this was to really break through some stereotypes of what type is and what the Enneagram is. And I know one of the mythologies in our culture anyway is that women fight and are competitive with each other. And I've always hated that because it hasn't been my life experience. And to sit in the tenderness of your friendship is such an honor. Thank you. It's just an honor.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I want to close with it's a quote from a Chinese philosopher. His name is Mencius, and I'm actually going to change it just slightly based on something you said, Fran, so here it is. Friends are the family that God never gave us.
With heartfelt gratitude, I'm Sandra.
And I'm Chris.
And we invite you to continue to take a courageous and a loving look at what is.
We want to thank all who've made this podcast a reality, including Wake Forest University School of Divinity, for their financial and institutional support. For Sally Ann Morris, who composed our theme music, and for Toby Becker, who provided graphic design.
Thanks to Eric Merle for his editing expertise, to Tom and Lynn Berger, who provided recording space, and to the Narrative Enneagram and our mentors, Helen Palmer and Dr. David Daniels, its founders. And special thanks to all of our guests.
We offer this podcast as a free resource for personal and spiritual growth. And in order to continue this work, we need your support. Please visit our website, heartoftheenneagram.com, to make a contribution and to purchase our companion book.
In the days that lie ahead, may your mind be curious, your heart courageous, and your presence compassionate.